Join us for the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society's annual conference. It's happening October 24th through the 26th in New York City. This year's theme, Rethinking Paradigms, Innovative Approaches for Optimal Wellness. And it's not just for healthcare professionals. Teachers, parents, and curious minds are invited too. We've got a phenomenal lineup of keynote speakers. Dr. Thomas Campbell, physician and co-author of The China Study, bringing insights on nutrition and lifestyle medicine. And Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, trauma expert and author of The Body Keeps the Score, who practically rewrote how we think about trauma. I'll be chatting with some of this year's speakers in upcoming episodes of Healthy Brain, Happy Body, so stay tuned to get a sneak peek and maybe even a little inspired. Find the registration link in the show notes. It's 3 days of inspiration, insight, and community you won't want to miss. Here's what Angelica Sadar, Executive Director of NRBS, is looking forward to.
I am super excited about this. We've been putting a lot of energy into the planning. We're going to have the hotel is awesome. It's a small boutique New York hotel that has just like lots of fun nooks and crannies, and it's right in the heart of Soho. We're partnering with a school. We're partnering with a consortium of schools. It's a total of at least 17 schools that are going to be partnering with us. So we're going to have information that's relevant for educators, for parents, for clinicians, and we're all going to learn from each other and interact with each other. There's lots of activities planned.
So join us in New York City, October 24th through the 26th. Find the registration link in the show notes or at nrbs.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Our guide today is Dr. Roseanne Kapana-Hodge, one of the speakers at the upcoming NRBS conference. Dr. Roseanne, as she is known, is a clinician, educator, podcaster, and expert on parenting emotionally dysregulated children. I talked with her to get a preview of her presentation and to find out more about what she calls a hidden epidemic of emotional dysregulation in young people. Listeners, we are talking with some of the speakers for the NRBS yearly conference, and today we are joined by Dr. Roseanne Kapana-Hodge. Roseanne, welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
Well, I'm so glad to be back on and have this conversation about all things neuro and biofeedback.
You're going to be talking about dysregulation. How do you define emotional dysregulation, and how do you distinguish it from challenging behavior?
Yeah. So, you know, whether it's kids or adults, we all experience emotional dysregulation. And it's when we have big feelings, reactivity to things in our environment that are overwhelming for our brain and our nervous system. And, you know, it's something that we increasingly experience. So what's the difference between challenging behaviors and dysregulation? So first of all kids have challenging behaviors and dysregulation at some point. It's normal, even though we think it's not. And really the difference is when you have challenging behaviors, it's something that is a difficulty, a stressor, a point of having a hard time. And usually parents, teachers, and adults, somebody does some level of support or intervention at a lower level, meaning like, hey, Amy, I see you're really struggling with the kids on the playground. How about if we do X, Y, and Z, and you do X, Y, and Z, and the child gets better and moves on and learns. But a dysregulated child who's consistently dysregulated reacts with big emotions, you know, is overreactive to small things as the norm. It's where you really have a hard time most of the time.
So the dysregulation goes beyond a tantrum. Mm-hmm. It keeps going, and it's triggered by much lower level, low intensity, if you will.
The problems
that we deal with every day.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes kids, like parents, you work with, you know, kids, sometimes people will say the wind blows and my kid dysregulates. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to make sense to adults. It's really their nervous system is reacting to the environment. And so they have big emotions. And it can be lots of, you know, what we think about big emotions, crying and upset, but it also can be shut down. It can be, you know, avoiding things, running away. It doesn't always have to be full of tears and tantrums.
So I want to do a little bit of a preview, not too much, but a little preview about your talk just to get people interested. And it's titled The Hidden Epidemic, Emotional Dysregulation in Today's Youth. So what is the hidden epidemic that you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, what's really happening is that we are moving to a state of constant dysregulation, both children and adults, right? And, you know, when we think about overwhelm, we think about the overwhelm that we experience in daily life. And parents today are more overwhelmed than ever. Half of the parents in America are overwhelmed. But what people aren't talking about is that it's really that our nervous systems, due to chronic stress, right? And we can talk more about stress, but our nervous systems are stuck in these activated states. And this is the crisis that we're all experiencing. And chronic dysregulation, we know that through research, emotional dysregulation is tied to more clinical mental health problems. So we have more mental health issues than ever. We have more adults medicated than ever. And we're all sort of struggling. And we're looking for the magic solution, the magic pill. But really what it is that we're not addressing the dysregulation of the nervous system. It's a chronic issue. When you talk to people, they're like, oh my gosh, that's me. You know, I'm having a hard time and I don't know how to calm my body. I don't know how to stop it.
What's behind this, do you think? I mean, there are the sort of obvious bugaboos and things like that, but what's causing all this chronic stress?
Yeah, I think people are just accepting a high level of stress and they're not actually realizing what they can do to counter it. You know, you and I were talking earlier. I had a coffee chat with a group of parents today virtually, and this mom actually said to me, so I'm dysregulated, my kid's dysregulated. Are you telling me really it's hopeless? There's nothing I can do. And I said, no, actually, I'm telling you the opposite. Is I'm telling you there's so much you can do, and you only need 10 minutes a day. And I think the conversation is that we're talking so much about the struggle, but we're not really talking about practical solutions. And I think it's not just accepting stress, but nobody's doing anything on the daily to counter stress. And we think that, you know, we have to do big things, right? Some people have clinical issues, and yes, everybody in the world can basically benefit from neurofeedback and biofeedback. But there's a lot of things we could do all the time. And parents don't realize, you know, when you bring in those little things and how much they do to reset the nervous system, right? We can't, you know, it's like we're all walking around with a computer with the blue circle and we're sitting there and it's going round and round and round. But nobody's powering down. We just keep going. And you know, there's so many contributors, you know, poor diet, sleep, a lack of, you know, a lot of people aren't socializing. I think we moved into that in the pandemic. And I think people never really got back to the old way of socializing. And people are working a lot of hours. And certainly devices are a part of this, not just for kids. You know, we always have the barrier between work and home is no longer, right? And so that phone, you're always thinking, oh, is this work? I have to respond to this. And, you know, it really is activating. We know that it activates your nervous system. Even just having a phone in your bedroom, your brain will wake up more because it knows the phone's there, you know?
Right. And it so becomes so normalized.
And so, you know, what do people do when they're stressed? They're like, well, I'm going to binge watch Netflix every day. I'm going to have my 3 to 6 drinks. Like, we know some people make healthier choices, but people get really stuck and they're like, what do you mean, Dr. Rowe, if I do this belly breathing? You know, how do I do it? How long do I have to do it? I'm like, every day. For the rest of your life, you know, and, you know, lifestyle components need to be integrated and we need to be talking about that. And, you know, it's very true. I mean, people are overwhelmed. Parents are so overwhelmed and kids feel it. And even if your child isn't stressed, the other kids are stressed. And we're all just co-dysregulating. That's what I call it. Not co-regulating. We're co-dysregulating.
So the co-dysregulation in some ways has become our new normal. How has it been misunderstood or misdiagnosed? Because we're not really talking, we sort of are talking about this as a problem, but in some ways I think we're missing some of the fundamentals.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's happening is we say we have greater mental health awareness, right? But then all of a sudden everybody thinks they have ADHD, right? And, you know, it's not the case that everybody has ADHD. It's just not that way. What's happening is we think we're having a hard time. It means I have a clinical problem. And maybe that is the truth. Maybe you are experiencing temporary anxiety or depression. But ADHD doesn't just pop up. But what will happen is the stress we experience can cause us to have attention problems, can cause us to feel anxious, to cause us to have physical problems. And so we're not really making a great connection to what actually happens, you know, and the solutions, right? We only in mental, not only, we're all neurofeedback and biofeedback providers. We realize there's other ways to reset the nervous system, but yet, you know, this has been around since the late 60s. It hasn't made it fully mainstream yet, right? There are many tools. There are many ways to support us that really can be part of your daily life. That's the missing part. I think people think, I do this. I do my 40 sessions of neurofeedback and I'm done. I don't have to continue to regulate my nervous system. But stress doesn't go away. We really need to get the message to people that it's really as simple as resetting yourself for 10 minutes a day and showing people how to do that.
Can you do that 10 minutes a day reset and not really change the lifestyle issues?
Well, if you're, you know, I remember years ago, I worked with an executive who was making a boatload of money. I mean, just obscene amount of money. And he was like, Roseanne, this is the worst job and I am super stressed, but I need to keep it. And I was like, I get it, right? He had autistic kids. I was like, I get it. So he's like, I'm going to do this neuro and I'm going to keep coming here until I'm like, it's a good counter for me. So in that case, right, if you're not changing your lifestyle, I'm not telling everybody to go quit their job. But if you're not changing your lifestyle, you know, how is this going to work? Now, regardless, we all go through stressful periods, right? Today I just got back my second edits for my book that comes out in just over a year. And so all of a sudden I saw it in my box and you feel like a little tinge of anxiety. And I was like, why are you feeling anxious? Like your book is tight. This is not going to take you more than a day to do these edits and you have a month. And, you know, and so it's those kinds of things that sort of pile up in our daily life. So, you know, what am I doing to counter it, right? Okay, this last few days have been hard for me. So I'm making sure I'm taking extra time. But we really, really have to integrate, you know, the diet, you know, taking baths, walks with friends, lots of hugs. You know, my kids make jokes at me because I was like, who needs a dopamine hit? And I give them hugs. They're teenagers. Mm-hmm. Teenage boys, you know, and they laugh at this point. They think it's pretty funny. So, but, you know, it's hard. And again, we can't just say I'm getting a massage twice a month. What are you doing on the daily to keep yourself lubricated against stress inoculated is really what it is.
Well, and actually the thing that just occurred to me with your dopamine hit example is you're not telling your kids, and maybe you do, but you're not saying to your kids, get off your phones. You're saying, how can we modulate what we're doing in order to support what life is
right
these days?
We're not going to not be on our phones. I mean, I love my phone, Sal. You know what I mean? But how do you counter that? What are you doing? Are you saying I'm not doing a phone, you know, an hour before bedtime? Am I, you know, I consciously put my phone in airplane mode multiple times a day so that I don't hear dings. I don't have any notifications go off on my PC. If I had notifications going off on my PC, I would feel like I had the worst case of ADHD. Like, I have a big team of people. The Slack would be going bing, 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 bing in the background. So what, you know, what triggers you? Like, first identify what triggers you and, you know, how are you going to modify that, right? I had a friend that only sent emails 3 times a day, 9 a.m., 12 p.m., and 3 p.m. I don't think that's a bad idea. For another person, they might hate that, you know? But how can you use your phones responsibly? That's what I try to teach my kids. You know, where are the boundaries of what they're going to have with that, right? Because, you know, kids today, they're on, you know, we're moving from a school that had all books to a school that has some books. But I just ordered the textbooks. They were like, you're the only parent, I think, who's ever ordered real textbooks at our school. And I was like, I need real textbooks, people. Mm-hmm. You know, just to cut down on some of that demand of looking at things online.
Well, you're raising actually another interesting question. When we're working with kids, the parents need to be involved. So what is the parent's role for co-regulation?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think because kids are so distressed today, we often feel like we have to rescue and alleviate our kids' stress, right? So, you know, my kid's upset about something. I want to go in right away and rescue, right? And rescue is different than talking about it or helping them, you know, cope with it or find a solution. Rescue is like, I'm going to take care of this, right? Oh, you're upset about something. You know, I'm going to answer that question for you. Whatever it is, we've gotten to the point where kids are so bubble wrapped, they don't know how to handle it. So the first step is parents, you know, putting their own oxygen mask on and regulating first. This is not easy. In the same conversation that I had today with a group of 20 parents, you know, this mom's like, I'm always running hot. I'm always in the red, Dr. Rowe, because I call it going in the red. And I was like, yeah, so what are you going to do about it? I was like, you chose kids. Your kids didn't choose you. How are you going to handle this? And, you know, and she was like, well, you got me thinking about it. And I was like, go back and listen to my episodes on co-regulation. So we can't go in hot and support a child who's dysregulating and expect them to regulate. We are their anchors. And they need for us not to be perfect, but to be regulated before you go in and try to correct and console and support a kid. And I think that has become increasingly hard with our lifestyle, right? And, you know, this is something, the other thing is that even if we lived a life of dysregulation, we had difficult things, you know, everybody can learn to regulate. Adults can learn to regulate. Kids can learn to regulate. Kids aren't born regulated. They learn to regulate through life experiences. And the most powerful way is the parent-child bond and being there for them and helping kids learn how to manage their emotions and deal with uncomfortableness. Uncomfortableness is not a bad thing. Uncomfortableness helps you to identify later when something is dangerous or is a big problem, right? You know, you have to have a stress tolerance and learn how to problem solve. I mean, that is just so critical for mental health. But you know, co-regulation is actually the most powerful tool that parents don't know that they have.
And do you have some specific steps to help parents co-regulate?
Yeah, I think the first step is pausing. I mean, parents don't use the power of pause is pretty incredible. When you stop for a minute instead of reacting or rescuing, it just gives you that chance, right? The first thing, if you're open to breath, right? Because not everybody likes to stop and breathe, but it literally, as you know, is the single easiest, greatest thing you can do to calm your nervous system and get it down into that beautiful parasympathetic state. And I think people don't use it enough. You know, when people say to me, how long do I have to do this? I'm like, I do it like 20 times a day. you know, my hack is I try to do it every time I sit down. So if I get up and then I sit down, that's my subconscious cue. And I do some quick, you know, 3 diaphragmatic breaths and reset myself, get myself down. 'Cause Everybody knows me. I'm a spaz. And I have a lot of good stress in my life. And but your body doesn't know the difference. But the first thing is to pause, do what you need to do to regulate. Maybe it's a mantra. Maybe it's like, this will pass, or she's not doing this on purpose, right? Because we have so many ideas about dysregulation. Well, they're the kids, you know, the kids being disrespectful. They're doing it on purpose. Nobody ever wants to dysregulate at any age. You know, it's embarrassing. It feels awful. You know, I mean, there's just not a person on the planet who enjoys it.
Thinking more about tools and interventions, you've obviously focused on this for a long time, and you've got some systems that you've developed, like the Brain Behavior Reset,
yep,
the Natural Parenting Toolkit. What are some of the components of interventions that make them effective?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it really depends on where you're at, right? So I think the first part of intervention that is so important is actually education. Like, why is this happening in my child? What, you know, if I'm triggered, why? Really getting to that, you know, understanding of what's driving the nervous system, right? Because when we think about it from the brain state, we don't personalize it. And so regardless of the intervention, you have to really start with why is this happening? And then what is this intervention and how does it work? I don't honestly believe that that is done very often. And, you know, and it makes everything work better. And ideally, if you're working with kids, you're actually getting both parents or the partners and whoever else is on their care team on board at the same time. Because what I have experienced in all these decades is that probably 80% of the time, the partners, the parents are not seeing the problem, and they don't, or nor do they agree on the solution 80% of the time. So a large part of my work when people work one-on-one with me is actually educating and helping them to understand the whys of why they have to parent similarly, that not one parent is right, not one parent is wrong. This is what the kid needs, and it's about learning. And so that's just one of the most basic critical things that I can't emphasize enough. And is really a big part of, you know, every level of intervention, whether somebody's buying a digital course for me or they're reading my book or they're working one-on-one with me. But that is truly the most critical part. But when you have a highly dysregulated kid and or an adult and they're really struggling, they're struggling with anxiety or they're struggling with OCD or pants pandas or whatever it is, right? I mean, those are some of the most common reasons people come to me. You know, we have a situation where we've got to help them, right? And as for those of us that do neurofeedback and biofeedback, it works, and it works quickly, right? It's rare. I always say me regulating the nervous system is the easiest part of this whole thing. It's the behavioral change. And then, you know, the lifestyle components that go with it. I'm huge in diet and different types of physical exercises and whatnot. Diet is critical. It is so, so critical for so many reasons, from blood sugar, you know, to all these genetic variants that individuals and kids have now that they need certain kinds of foods, and then just getting inflammation down. But I think it's easy to regulate the nervous system. How are we teaching them to have lasting change? What are the behaviors that they're going to replace? And whether it's coaching or psychotherapy, it's got to be a part of it. We've now conditioned our society to believe that you can just take a pill and it's better. That just doesn't work that way. The brain forms habits that are learned, and they need to be unlearned and replaced. It's like behaviorism 101.
Right.
But parents don't system. Know that for the nervous system. But, you know, it's and I believe in the potential of everybody. Like, I just need 1% the viewing of 1% they believe or willingness to do it. Because if you have that, then you can go, you know, and you can really improve. But there's a lot to be said, and I get it. You know, therapists and individuals in mental health and medical providers are doing their best they can, and people are coming in with a trailer full of stuff. And it's like, here, I've been to 7 other providers. I've been to 25 other providers. Tell me the thing that's going to fix it. Well, it's not the thing. There's changes, and it might be lifestyle changes in family. I always call it the family ecosystem. Your ecosystem has to change, and it's hard. You know, it's not easy. And I always tell my people, I walk the walk. This is what I do for my family and kids. And, you know, I've never asked people to do things I don't do for myself.
Can you think of a case that you might be able to share with us, a dysregulated kid, and how that worked through?
Yeah. You know what? I got a beautiful email today from one of my peeps, one of my PANS kids. And for those people who don't know what PANS is, it's when you have an infection or toxic trigger, creates a misdirected immune response, and the body basically starts attacking itself. It produces all this inflammation, and you have a range of behaviors, but you either have to have tics, an eating disorder, OCD, but you can have a bunch of other things at the same time. And so this is one of my most extreme cases of PANS I ever had. And essentially he was in a flight mode, and anytime the door would open, he would just flee. And so they had to lock everything. Everything had to be locked. And so he was too dysregulated to even start neurofeedback. So we started with a PEMF device, a small one that I have. And so he started to get better, like really quick, to the point we were like, what's going on? And I should preface this by saying, very atypical of my PANS cases, this was 100% normal child. He had not one issue before. Nothing. And then had a series of infections, different infections. And then it was just like a dramatic sudden onset. Fantastic parents. I mean, fantastic. I mean, the families I work with are so lovely. They're so great. And, you know, had already been working with a great provider, medical provider. And, you know, and so we regulated first. Then we added in the neurofeedback, and then we actually had to do, he was extreme OCD, which kind of quieted on its own, still did some therapy, but really they needed trauma work because they were so traumatized by what had happened. Like, this was going on for 2 years where you couldn't open the door. He would run out and lay in the street. So, you know, and it was very, very frightening. And, you know, these parents luckily, you know, got the right help. And luckily he was really responsive. But today she just sent me a beautiful email because I like to do genetic testing with the families I work with. And so I send them out. It gets all done. You know, they sign up on their own. It gets done. And then I like to reprocess it and then come up with, you know, how this impacts their mental health, their physical health, and then what foods they should eat. And I give them a grocery list. I do all kinds of fun stuff, practical stuff. I'm always thinking what's practical. And anyway, she was just reflecting on just how so dramatic his change was, and how grateful she was. And it's just so beautiful to hear that, you know. And yet just a few months ago, you know, was so, so worried about him, you know. And you know, we, you know, all the providers, we had a crisis plan. We had all kinds of things. They had to see a provider in their state. Luckily we were able to get him out of it. But, you know, the dysregulation was extreme. That's an extreme case, you know. And, you know, I have lots of kids. Like, I have families where they just don't know how to manage a kid who even occasionally dysregulates. And that's okay, because we're not trained for that, right? And so, you know, I think the thing about what I talk about, and certainly what I'm talking about in my next book, is that these techniques work for the most dysregulated kids. They also work for kids that are just typical and going through a hard time. I mean, co-regulation is a non-negotiable when you have a kid who's always dysregulating, but it's also just a staple that we're not empowering parents about educating them and showing it how it works. Makes me sad, because parenting is much harder than any of us realize, right?
Absolutely. And especially, you know, I think this, as you're saying, this sort of emerging dysregulation is making it even harder. So yeah. There's more pressure on both ends. There's more pressure for kids. There's more pressure for parents. So trying to make it all work just becomes more and more complicated.
Yeah. And life is complicated. You know, it's not easy. You know, even when I, you know, was growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, some of my friends' moms were home some of the time. But even that had ended. We've got parents working a lot and just kind of, you know, with the economic changes that are happening, they're not in our favor and in anybody's favor. And so there's just a lot of compounded stressors. And again, people don't realize, like I actually had a physician say to me, I know this is terrible. And I did tell him it was terrible because that's how kind of provider I am. He's like, I just don't understand why he just won't sit down and shut up and be in a corner. And I was like, honey, that's not the way kids work.
Right.
And I was like, I hope you don't say that to your patients. But you know, people let their hair down with me and they, you know, it's good. And then we say, okay, well, that's just not a normal thing to expect. So like, how can we work from there? Like, what are you willing to do? You know, we learned a parent from our parents and times right. have changed. You know, nobody, when I grew up, we had Atari. Okay. Like it wasn't attached to us. It's a lot to manage.
Yeah. And I think technology just drives so much more quickly than our ability to deal with it and to adapt to it.
100%.
Well, with all these things happening with technology and changes in society, that's driving all of this dysregulation for everyone. Are there any emerging trends in terms of managing this? What are you looking at for our future?
Yeah. Well, I think parents are really much more aware that there are better ways to parent. I think they're also much more aware, you know, having the right, this is my third decade, about what are clinical issues? What do I need to actually look for? And also they're destigmatized, not everywhere, but in certain parts of the country, you know, we've destigmatized mental health. So people are much more willing to get help. And I think the greatest change I've seen, and super exciting, is that, you know, doing holistic things is very acceptable, right? You know, I'm gluten-free. I've been gluten-free for like 1 million years. 20 years ago, the only place that served gluten-free people was Disney World. And they did an awesome job and they still do. And I love Disney and I want you to be my sponsor, Disney. So, but I do love
hopefully Disney will listen to the podcast.
I know. We love you,
sponsor
Disney.
You. We hope that to happen.
But now there's that little gluten-free on all menus, right? And that's just one little thing in our culture that we're realizing people have food sensitivities. So I love that people are willing to try now and it's not so taboo. And it's also like neurofeedback, diet, different types of exercise. Used to be the last stop on the train when you tried everything else. It's not that way anymore. And so for many people, they're reaching to holistic first. And I love that. You know, and I think that's really about parent empowerment. Like they're realizing my pediatrician doesn't always have the answer, or I talk to this therapist and she doesn't get me. Like I got to go to somebody else, you know, and the power of search is actually helpful, you know. So that's exciting.
Absolutely. And you know, I find that more and more people are coming to see me, not last.
Yes.
So. You know, because like you, I work with a lot of folks who have chronic health issues, mm-hmm. and it absolutely used to be we were like the 27th provider, and they would tell you, you're
the last person. This is the last thing I'm going to try. You know,
right? And nobody wanted to see us, of course, because that meant they were crazy.
That's right.
So, sort of just bringing this to an end, wrapping up for people who come to the conference, to the NRBS conference, what do you hope they take away from your talk?
Yeah, well, I think, well, first of all, I really hope that they take a different viewpoint about what are the challenges that parents are facing, but also what are the tools they need? And how can we make it better for parents? Because I am a super all about empowerment and hope and actionable strategies. So I really hope they walk away with tools in their pocket and things that they can start using today. Because I do feel that that's the missing link. And, you know, it's sort of like with these tools, it's like the china in my china cabinet, right? Can't just let it sit in there. You got to use it, right?
Right.
And so I think that, and it doesn't have to be something that I'm doing. You know, you want to do an hour a day? Great. But, you know, these are tools that you can use at 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there. And, you know, it really, really makes a difference. You know, it's sort of like doing squats. I'm very obsessed with doing 100 reps of exercise, then moving on. You do 100 squats three times a day, you're going to look real good. And that 100 squats is not going to take you. I mean, it shouldn't take you more than 5 minutes. I mean, it could be like quick, but it adds up. You know, and so it really, it's those kinds of things. I want to challenge the assumption of what, you know, we think parenting has to be and, you know, and change the communication and really reduce stress for people because it's pretty bad out there. I'm worried for parents, you know, but on the same breath, I love that parents are listening to podcasts, going to conferences, doing things to really, in you know, change and learn, right? That understanding is the first part. We can't, you know, when you know better, you can do better. But if we're having the same old narratives about parenting, we're not going to do better.
Well, from your mouth to parents' ears. Rosanne, thank you so much. It's always great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us here on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
And I'm looking forward to seeing everybody at the conference.
You are listening to Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Dr. Rosanne Kapana-Hodge. Follow the links on the show notes to learn more about her work, her books, and her podcast, It's Gonna Be Okay. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the Subscribe Here link or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Reviews help us get more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Also, let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. This year, the NRBS will gather in New York City from October 24th through the 26th. Be sure to join us. All opinions expressed on Healthy Brain, Happy Body are those of our guests and not the NRBS. This podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.